everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Caroline White, Deputy Editor of Boat International, and here with me to navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is our Business Editor, Gabrielle Lazaridis.
Perfect. Hey, Caroline, great to be here.
Thanks. Sorry, we were just discussing my pronunciation of her name, and apparently Stu was shamed on the last podcast that Gabby did.
I don't want this to become a thing. It's been plaguing me all my life.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, to kick us off, the World Super Yacht Award nominees have been announced. So you can visit boatinternational.com/events to see who is in the fight. And I can tell you there's some really big hitters in there, some spectacular boats, and it'll be a real clash of the titans. The winners, of course, will be announced at the World Super Yacht Awards in Venice in early May.
Do you know what stuck out to me? I was looking at the nominees earlier today, and in one of the categories, there's a support vessel, a more traditional looking motor yacht, and a sport fisher all in one category. And they're so varied. I have absolutely no idea how the judges are going to go about having to choose a winner.
No, impossible. Yeah. That'd be really interesting to see how they judge them, what the sort of metrics are. And so in terms of other news that we have, the big thing that stuck out to me is in recent days, Amadea. So that's a boat that we've reported on a bit in the past. To give you a bit of background, Amadea, which is an 106.1-meter Lursen, was arrested by the US in May 2022 after its alleged beneficiary owner was sanctioned in reaction to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. So last I heard, it was in San Diego. What is the latest news on that boat, Gabby?
So this is definitely a big story this week. A U.S. judge on Monday ruled that Edward Kudenatov, talk about difficult last names, the former CEO of a Russian state-owned oil conglomerate, Rosneft, cannot plausibly claim ownership of the yacht, which U.S. authorities seized in 2022 following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The U.S. previously passed a law authorizing the transfer of seized Russian assets subject to U.S. jurisdiction to Ukraine for economic and humanitarian purposes, much to aid in the war effort. And Kudenatov, who's not subject to U.S. sanctions, actually sought to block Amadea's forfeiture by laying claim to the vessel in 2023, though prosecutors argued he was merely a straw owner for sanctioned Russian billionaire Suleyman Karimov. But during Monday's ruling, U.S. District Judge Dale Ho found a lack of evidence to support that Kudenatov held or exercised incidents of ownership beyond just the bare title, and therefore lacked standing to contest the forfeiture. He stated, there is a sufficient basis to conclude that Kudenatov is merely just a straw owner of the Amadea who holds the title for another party. And strengthening his decision, the court determined that all other incidents of ownership, so that would be possession, dominion, and control, and a financial stake, were held by members of Karimov's family following a September 2021 MOA, so Memorandum of Agreement, which allegedly facilitated the sale of Amadea for 225 million euros. And this outcome brings the U.S. Justice Department one step closer to the vessel's forfeiture, which would allow the yacht to be sold at auction. It also follows a previous attempt by the U.S. to sell the yacht amid excessive carrying costs, which the courts ultimately denied, and we have been reporting on previously.
Yeah, I mean, if you're essentially in kind of caretaker mode for a yacht that size, it must be enormously expensive just to kind of keep it in decent enough shape that should it eventually need to be sold, it could be sold for a decent amount of money.
Their arguments were basically, you know, who's ultimately paying for that? It would be the US taxpayers, which I'd imagine they're not too keen on.
No, difficult sell, I'd say. Given relations between the US and Russia have changed under Trump's newish leadership, it'll be interesting to see the effects he has on sanctions. So, I mean, as everybody knows, to European eyes at least, he's been quite alarmingly friendly with Putin just a few weeks ago. And then he paused military aid and intelligence sharing with Ukraine, which sort of furthered that that impression. Then Russia launched that big attack on Ukraine's energy infrastructure. And then last week, in what seemed like a reaction to that Russian attack, Trump posted on his social media platform that he was strongly considering large-scale sanctions and tariffs on Russia, with quite a lot of capital letters, as I recall, until a ceasefire and peace deal with Ukraine was reached. So it looks like he's using it as a tool to get Putin to the negotiation table. But I mean, really, who knows which way he'll turn next week?
And you know, something that I've been kind of thinking about in the past few weeks is all of these yachts that have been sitting sanctioned somewhere. I mean, you only have to look at Fee for, as an example, not that that yacht was under sanctions, but it's been sitting somewhere and it desperately needs maintenance. So you're going to have all of these boats, assuming that, you know, when the peace deal goes through, all of these boats become are no longer subject to sanctions. They're all going to have to go into a maintenance yard somewhere immediately. And that's just going to fill up all the slots. So I can imagine there's going to be quite a bit of congestion for yachts looking to go into any kind of refit or repair yard.
Interesting point, Gabby. So Gabby, as our business editor, you've been following all these developments quite carefully.
There's been a lot happening.
Exactly. And their effect on the superyacht industry in particular. So we thought we'd have a bit of a look at the effects of Trump on the superyacht world. Could you tell us what's been going on and what the effects have been so far?
No, this is actually a really great week to talk about it, because the big news in the business space has to do with these 25% tariffs that the US imposed on global steel and aluminum imports. Sorry, I'm Canadian, so I say aluminum. those went into effect at midnight last night and could have quite the impact on US industries reliant on those metals. So that includes boat manufacturers. These producers could now face higher costs, which one would imagine will be passed along to the consumer. The tariffs would also affect aluminum products such as fishing reels, reel accessories, and nets, which has not landed well among the sport fishing industry, which again is quite big in the States.
Of course, yeah. I mean, that's a very important factor in the US. So what's the response been?
So the tariffs drew just widespread condemnation from other countries, particularly my homeland of Canada, who's the biggest supplier of both steel and aluminum to the US. Shortly after the US announced the tariffs would be going into effect, Canada came back with a set of retaliatory tariffs on US imports. So it's becoming a bit of a trade nightmare. As the National Marine Manufacturers Association president and CEO said, Canada's the largest customer of American-made boats, accounting for 51% of U.S. boat exports, which I'm assuming also includes yachts. At the moment, I don't think boats are included in the tariffs, but this could certainly implicate the nation's supply chain and certainly consumer sentiment overall.
Wow. That's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. And there's more. So as a bit of a breaking news update this morning, the EU announced the return of retaliatory tariffs on US imports, including on recreational boats. For their part, the European boating industry issued a statement shortly after the tariffs were announced. And they said that tariffs disrupt businesses, it hinders economic growth, it jeopardizes jobs, particularly for small and medium-sized enterprises that form the backbone of the boating industry in Europe and the EU as a whole. The statement went on to say that it's important to note that these tariffs are unrelated to the recreational boating sector. Oh, actually, that answers my question. Arising from the dispute over steel and aluminum, they would negatively impact the European industry and competitiveness goals and carry unintended consequences. The permanent removal of tariffs on unrelated sectors such as recreational boats would instead support economic growth on both sides of the Atlantic. And the last time there was a tariff dispute with the US in 2018, the EU responded with a 25% tax on US boats. This led to a drop in exports from the US marine industry to Europe, which listeners will know is a critical market in yachting. So there's always the chance that history could repeat itself, but I think everyone in the industry is hoping for a swift resolution.
I'm sure. So how much does the US produce in terms of new build superyachts?
I had a look at this in Boat Pro, our super yacht intelligence data platform. And according to Boat's global order book, the US actually used to be the number one producer of super yachts back in 1995, though they've fallen down the rankings a bit and now come in at number 8. This year's order book, which was released in January, showed the US is currently responsible for a bit over 3% of global super yacht production, or 41 projects out of the global figure of 1,138 projects in development.
So has it all been bad news with Trump?
No, I don't want to make it seem that way. Trump's presidency appears to have had a more positive effect on the brokerage side of the industry. Again, we discussed this in our annual brokerage report, but basically sales were pretty quiet heading into the November US presidential election and then spiked almost immediately after. Sales stayed high into December and the momentum even carried over into January. Although something interesting to mention about this is that a lot of the brokers that I've been speaking to don't actually think we've seen the extent of the spike yet. So essentially, they've said that these initial purchases were by people who were already looking to buy a yacht anyway, and Trump's victory sort of just clinched the deal for them. Anyone that's newly considering buying a yacht is now just engaging in initial discussions with brokers who have noted an increase in activity since November, but that would mainly just be from increased queries. But that the wave of purchases has yet to materialize, and we'll likely see it later this year.
Well, that's pretty exciting stuff. So we'll see that that wave crashing hopefully later in the year.
Great pun.
Yeah. Well, you started it. I just finished it. So in terms of other positive news from the US, we've got the Palm Beach Boat Show coming up March 19th to 23rd. And that is a really, it's turning into arguably the most important US show for big boats. We've been tallying up the numbers. And Gabby, would you like to tell us a little bit about how it's doing in terms of numbers?
Yeah, in terms of super yachts attending, this year's edition is set to absolutely smash previous records. We've counted 185 yachts already confirmed compared to 120 last year, which I think was already one of the biggest showcases for Palm Beach. So a huge jump. Some of the biggest yachts due to attend include Silver Yachts' 85.3 meter Bold, the 78.4 meter Amaryllis from Abaking and Rasmussen, and Kotakasa's 65 meter Eternity. As with every year, the majority of yachts on display are between 24 and 40 meters, but there's also a really strong showing of yachts between 40 and 70 meters this year. And this appears to track with the increasing demand for yachts of that size on the brokerage market, which we noted in our annual brokerage report. But overall, like you said, the Palm Beach show seems to be attracting a lot of attention this year. All of the brokers I've been speaking with are saying the same thing, which is that Palm Beach is the show to be at this year. I'm kind of gutted that I'm not going after hearing all of this. Kurt Boschart, sorry if I just butchered your last name. I know how it feels. a super yacht broker at Denison Yachting went so far as to say that Palm Beach is becoming the premier show in South Florida, if not the world, based on the quality of yachts on display. Sarah Gianola from Heesen Yachts, which is showcasing the 57-meter Santosha, highlighted the show's ability to draw the more serious buyers. She said, unlike other shows, Palm Beach is known for its significant sales impact, despite attracting fewer visitors, drawing more affluent clients who appreciate the serene setting. So yeah, it's shaping up to be a really exciting show by the sounds of it. And our research director, Raphael, even said the final tally will likely get up to 200 super yachts, which would be an incredible milestone.
Really interesting. Yeah. So comparing it to Miami, and I don't want to do Miami down. And I would say I've only been to the Miami show once. I'm not much of a judge, but every time I spoke to our US boss, Cecile Gowett, during Miami, she was stuck in traffic. So I'd call her in the morning. She was stuck in traffic on the way to the show. I called her in the afternoon. She was stuck in traffic coming back from the show. It just seemed like a very difficult show to get to because of the kind of logistics and the positioning of everything.
Do you know what? I actually have not been to a US boat show yet. So next time around, I'll definitely push for Palm Beach.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. Exactly. And Fort Lauderdale is, you know, always going to be known as, well, has always been known as the number one, but it's so massive that perhaps it's more difficult to navigate for that reason. Whereas Palm Beach is, you know, a manageable size. The boats are impressive. So looking at a few debuts to mention at Palm Beach, Diamond Binter is definitely one to see. That's a 58-meter tanker, which featured in our March issue, which of course should be at the front of your Boat International Library. The owner is a real gearhead who's fascinated with cars, helicopters, and so on. And he actually has his own pilot's license. And the boat really shows that influence. So it's visible in the commercial grade helipad and the very masculine bridge and the automotive inspired styling, both inside and out. The boat also has, at the owner's request, a direct passage from the lower deck cabins to the beach area, which passes through the engine room through this kind of glass tunnel. And just to put that into perspective, when the yacht debuted at the Monaco Yacht Show last year, the other attending yacht that showed off that feature, as you may know, was the 122-meter Kismet, which is more than twice Diamond Binter's size. So it's a really interesting boat in terms of customization.
Why is that feature becoming so much more popular nowadays?
I don't know. I suppose, well, certainly with this boat, it sounded as if the design, they were able to customize the design to to put cabins in new places to accommodate this.
No, I really put you on the spot there. But I guess from the sounds of it, it's almost always led by a tech-minded owner.
Yeah, I think it is. I think perhaps, so on Kismet, I know that they call it the Tron experience. So that gives you a kind of taste of the atmosphere they're trying to create. So perhaps it's potential as an atmospheric, interesting area, an area of interest to guests is being exploited more. Perhaps it's been recognised as a more interesting area. So another one to mention is the Heesen Santosha 57 metre, which you've already mentioned, Gabby. That is the cover boat for our April issue, which will be hitting the shelves pretty much as this podcast goes out. Santosha began life as Project Akira, which was the first in a new class of all-aluminium 57-metre yachts with the fast displacement hull form. It's the largest size that Heesen will start on spec, and it's right up their alley. It's sporty, elegant, fast, and it's solidly built. In April 2023, the project found her owners, who were extremely experienced charterers who knew exactly what they wanted. They took delivery 18 months later, having entirely reimagined the interior, so that gives you an idea of how much they changed. One notable feature that you should actually be able to see, even if you don't have a chance to go on board, is this concave-shaped stern hatch that creates a space for loungers, and it really gives an unusual look to the stern of the boat. It became this sort of design motif, and it's repeated in the overhangs on each deck all the way up to the sun deck. She's actually for charter with Burgess from €400,000 a week this summer, if she happens to take your fancy at Palm Beach show. The last one I will go into is Fox. This is a 35-metre Pendennis Explorer delivered last year and named after Robert Ware Fox the Younger, who was an inventor from the yard's hometown of Falmouth in the UK on the south coast. He was a 19th century scientist who invented a special type of compass that ultimately guided the expedition that discovered the South Pole. So Fox has got this beautiful big open aft deck measuring 103.5 square metres, and it can store a pair of 7.5-metre tenders, plus jet skis, quad bikes, or even a submersible. She's for sale with Burgess for €18 million, which I guess is probably the reason she is attending. So, Gabby, you've already mentioned a couple of these, but Amaryllis, that's one to see. That's a 78-metre Aberking with this stunning Art Nouveau interior. One of the first yachts I ever went on, so it has a particular place in my heart.
Oh, really?
Yeah, beautiful. Remember this really stunning staircase? Just, yeah, absolutely stunning. There's also Bold, which you mentioned, the 85-metre silver yachts with this military-looking Espinoino exterior, so we won't miss that one if you see it on the dock. There's also an Amels 272 synthesis that's worth checking out, and the 62-metre Bravissima, which is this beautiful 2023 Benetti that's been very private, so it's unexpected to see it at a show like this. I've certainly missed some, so apologies for that, but it's a great lineup and certainly seems to be turning into a top show for the US.
So I know you mentioned Bold. It seems Silver Yachts is coming up quite in the news recently. And do you know what? Maybe this is just me looking for any excuse to bring this up because I'm quite enamored by this new show that just returned for its third season. I don't know if anyone listening would have heard of The White Lotus.
Yes, love it.
They actually featured in one of their recent episodes a yacht from Silver Yachts. It would be the 36-meter catamaran named Space Cat.
Yes, so
the yacht is currently listed for sale under a joint central agency with Burgess and IYC, and she's asking $18.8 million, though I wonder if her recent cameo might bump up her resale value. And she's also available for charter with Northrop and Johnson around Phuket, Thailand, if anyone's planning any travel out there this summer.
Very thematic. So apparently also the White Lotus, slightly off topic, the Four Seasons in, I guess it's Phuket, where the series was filmed, their bookings have gone through the roof despite the fact that the program's about a massive murder. So yeah, perhaps you could combine the two, a stay in the hotel and a trip on the yacht for a themed week in Thailand.
If only I could afford that.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Gabby. It's been brilliant hearing more about the business side of super yachting and your insight into the US.
Thanks, Caroline. It's been great to be here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Boat Briefing, which was edited and produced by Naomi Wilson. It's a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you again soon.